say. If you a freak, then you come on with me. And I know what you came here to do. Knock, knock, up, let me see you get loose. It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on this Wednesday. It is, of course, Mailbag Wednesday. You can tweet your questions, and I'm sure you guys have a ton of them, using the hashtag AskCBD to @Browns_daily, @NathanSegura, or @Andrew_Gribble. The Gribbs in for Matt Wilhelm. Gribbs, how are you?
Doing great. You know, it's an emptier office today with the renovations getting underway, and I'm getting used to kind of the tremors we're starting to feel with the construction really getting underway underneath us.
Yeah, they're getting to business here, and we've got 2 hours of business to conduct here. This is, I know you've written about everything that's happened, but let's just give kind of, now that 2 days we've had, you know, the firings on Sunday, Sashi Brown named the executive vice president of football operations on Sunday night, the announcement of Paul DePodesta as the chief strategy officer yesterday, the coaching search is underway, we know that today. What are your thoughts on everything that's happened with the Browns in basically the last, you know, 72 hours?
It's been a lot of movement, probably more than I even anticipated about a week ago. You think these things tend to develop slowly, especially when you're looking at the head coaching market. There's a lot of teams out there, a lot of coaches you want that are still coaching, but this thing seems to be moving faster just because the Browns had some work to do to get ready for that head coaching search. And I think that clearly, as we saw Sunday night and Monday, I think fans, I've been saying this a lot, I think I can understand why fans may disagree with the plan, but you cannot deny that there is a plan in place. And this has been something that clearly has been in the works for a while. And the Browns are kind of taking a new look into these head coaching interviews. And as it appears, based on reports around the league and national writers, that they're getting basically any big name that's been linked to head coaching jobs. The Browns seem to be linked to these guys, so that no one's really turning them down for interviews at this point. So I think it's going to get much, much busier over the next week or so.
And I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be interesting to see how coaches respond to the new structure. I think some people are going to be super excited about it. I think some coaches will have, there'll be some pushback for it. And it is interesting, kind of the national narrative on what the Browns have done. You kind of have old school football people who have slammed it. You have people who are just skeptics of the Browns in general, because they've been so inept for so long, that are saying, well, why would this work? And then there's a huge number of people that have come out and written articles, and we will talk with one of them, Connor Orr from the NFL.com, will talk to us at 1:30 today about his article. Jason LaCanfora, who, as many people with, when you hear the name Jason LaCanfora, you think he's going to give the Browns the business, wrote a very positive article. Andrew Perloff at Sports Illustrated wrote a good one. Tom Verducci today at Monday Morning Quarterback. There's been at Yahoo, they're over the Cap, you talked about that one. So a lot to look at there in terms of what's going on with this organization. And when you heard yesterday Paul DePodesta, what did you think? And has that changed now that you've kind of had time to decipher and get through all the information and see where the Browns are at?
I think the more research you do on this guy, the more you realize you're like,
pretty impressive.
Wow.
Guy.
I mean, I just read something on BuzzFeed how he's getting into even on like side work and healthcare and
yeah,
things like that.
Verducci,
I mean, this guy is a worldly guy, and I think it's almost a disservice to just peg him as an analytics guy. I mean, this guy is a brilliant mind kind of guy, Harvard Law grad, that has a knack of organizing things well. I mean, when you see quotes the way that came out of the Mets, I think that started to sway people a lot, because usually a guy leaves an organization, there can be some sour grapes. You're not going to get these overwhelmingly positive quotes from his previous employer. But they were on board. I mean, that really started to change the narrative, which was quickly developing as the story broke yesterday. But they're like, you know, they went over the top in saying this guy reorganized everything, got us in the right place, and got this team moving in the right direction.
And got us to the World Series. And I think there are two things to that. Number one, they were able to be honest because they really, really like Paul DePodesta. Number two, I bet they're happy that if he's leaving them for another sports team, it is not a baseball organization. He left to go to the NFL, so they don't have to compete with him going forward.
Right, and you saw if you read Terry Pluto's column today, the overwhelmingly positive remarks from John Hart, former Indians GM, who's now with the Braves. I think he's happy to see him out of baseball. But again, just the respect this guy has carried in the sport that he's been in for the last 20 years, carry some weight. And I think, again, as he described in his own quote in his statement, you know, he's got a lot to learn with the business of football, but he's got a little bit of a football background having played it before. But clearly a smart guy that's going to probably be able to catch on quickly and implement some change. And I think it's going to be interesting to see the next thing is like how quickly do these changes take place? How long is this long-term project that needs to be implemented? But it's going to be something that goes beyond just 2016. This is going to go into 2017, 2018 to really install a plan that he has in place. But again, I think a lot of us just don't know what that plan exactly is, but we'll be seeing it evolve here.
We certainly will be. Again, at 1:30, we're going to have Connor Orr. We talked about the coaching search. Matt Derry, the co-host of Derry and Sharp, weekdays from 3 to 7 on Detroit Sports 105.1, is going to call us today. And we'll talk to him at 2 o'clock to give a look at Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator of that Detroit Lions team that really cranked it up over the second half of the season, finishing 6-2 over their final eight games, with one of those losses being a Hail Mary from Aaron Rodgers, which maybe he probably should have had Calvin Johnson out there, but they could have been 7-1 over the second half of this
season. Yeah, I mean, that was a great team that offensively they seemed to get it figured out with Stafford, whatever they did at offense.
Jim Bob Cooter, looking no further than the Cooter.
I won a fantasy football championship ride in the arm of Matt Stafford the second half of the season. But again, yeah, they were in a lot of those games because of their defense. They've got some real playmakers on that defense. A guy I really like out there is Darius Slay, the cornerback.
Corner
out
played
there.
Very well.
So, I mean, he is a guy that's really, really developed. Ziggy Ansah is a good player to see that has developed. I mean, I think he came in the league very raw and has gotten better and better with each year. That's a term that Browns fans like to throw around a lot is seeing player development, seeing these players get better
and
better.
He was picked, if you recall, one pick before Barkevious Mingo.
And he was kind of a breakout star. I was there for it at the Senior Bowl. And the Lions coaches were there for that Senior Bowl. They saw what they got in this guy, which is, again, the importance of the Senior Bowl. I'll keep stressing that over and over again as we get nearer to that. But, no, I mean, Terrell Austin's a guy that's been kind of a coach on the rise and certainly not just linked to the Browns going forward.
When you look at everything and you look at this coaching search, this is something very interesting. I thought the Tom Verducci article had an interesting take on it as well, and I'm going to read a sentence from here because our Ohio Business Machine hot topic of the day is, what do you want the most in the coach? And I think most people want a Tom Coughlin. I would take Tom Coughlin in a heartbeat, okay? But here is kind of what they said. This is from the Tom Verducci article. And he's talking about Dee Podesta. His first big move will be the hiring of the head coach. And as we know, he is in on the coaching search with Sashi Brown, Jimmy Haslam, Dee Haslam, and the search from Corn Ferry led by Jed Hughes. Based on the model used by analytically inclined baseball teams, he is likely to hire a coach who may not have much experience, but who is comfortable implementing the business practices and systems endorsed, if not created, by the front office. And that does not mean offensive and defensive schemes. It's just the process that they're trying to utilize in roster building, organization building. That's a sharp turn from the old school football model in which the coach sets the culture. And on Twitter, I've gotten a lot of people saying, well, we can't get a good coach here. The manager coach is the key conduit rather than the major domo. Former Rays, who's had a lot of success, and Cubs manager Joe Maddon is a prime such figure. And that was a vital component and a key takeaway in Jimmy Haslam's quote-unquote best policies tour, that your coach needs to be someone who is a part of the organization, a very powerful part, but not the organization.
I mean, and clearly I think people are worried if the coach is going to be overlooked. I mean, look at the structure that's about to be put in place. I mean, the coach is still going to be reporting to the owner here. I mean, that's – so I think this is the theme of this entire coaching search and reorganization of the front office is essentially getting everyone on the same page. I think that's been the key throughout the process. It's good to see – even though the last coaching search you thought you had a plan in place with the front office structure, obviously that changed after you hired Pettine. This one seems to be a much clearer plan in place going into these head coaching interviews, so you know that you get your three guys working together kind of in sync better than maybe you had it previously with Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer.
Indeed. So what questions again? What's the one quality you must have in your next head coach? I have two. Give us your top two candidates. And there's something I want to throw out that I wonder if people think I'm totally nuts about. I believe that, and so I guess I'll answer it. I'll get into it, and then we'll open up the phone lines. So I believe that this person must be, number one, must be bought into what's happening here.
Yeah.
Because that's going to keep the synergy, to keep the alignment, and allow for that growth within the building together. I think that's the most important thing. The other thing that I would say is the most important is they must be a great leader of men slash CEO. I really think that's what a head coach in the NFL is. It's someone who presides over the whole operation on the football side. When you really get into it and you talk to players, and Matt will tell you, you know, players spend the most time with their position coaches as football people. The coordinators are probably the ones who really set the football agenda for the particular sides of the football, offense, defense, special teams. So I want a coach who's a leader. I truly believe that if you brought in, let's say right now, the Browns hired Greg Popovich to be the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, I bet Greg Popovich would be a very successful NFL head coach, having no NFL background whatsoever.
That's bold. I don't think it's going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but I'm saying I truly believe that what he would have in terms of his organizational philosophy, because this is what they do with the Spurs, I think he'd be bought into it, and he understands how to lead and motivate and manage an overall process.
See,
and I think those are the most important things in a head coach.
See, when I list those two criteria, I would think the buy-in is assumed, because I think going through this process, they're going to get someone. So on top of that, I agree with the whole leadership. You need to have a commanding presence, I think, in that locker room with this coach. Have a guy that can get these players, whoever they are, to buy in right away with that person as well. Because I think from a player perspective, some will be more in tune to this kind of culture change, this philosophy change more than others. And I think it's on the coach to kind of direct it to the players and get those guys on board as well. The second thing for me, and this kind of falls in line with you, I think a quality that Jimmy Haslam mentioned on Sunday, the ability to assemble a great staff. I think that's something that is key. Like you said, these guys spend all their time with their position coach. I think, again, the player development area, you want to see these players getting better with what they're doing. So I would like a coach that has these connections, that can get these coaches on other staffs around the league, maybe get them to make that lateral move if it's possible.
Absolutely. I think the staff is an important part. I think you're right, because the staff, those are going to be the X's and O's, the nuts and bolts. And I think the staff, especially the position coach level, is key. We saw the difference in our quarterbacks and their development from Dow Loggins to Kevin O'Connell. I think it was pretty stark. And I think we did a very good job along with, you know, when you look at it, we did a very good job developing at that position. I think some of the other positions we didn't do a great job of developing, and I think that's what a lot of people are focused on. So, yes, leadership, and that to me goes to part of it being the CEO, being someone who knows how to oversee, get the right talent, delegate to them, and focus on all the things, because being a head coach is such a it is such an administrative position, actually, in the NFL, more so than I think people realize.
I mean, just think about how much you're just dealing with media in general. I mean, that's a big part of the job. I mean, that it doesn't fall on you even in remotely the same sphere as when you're a coordinator. I mean, that's a big part of the job, and that falls into the administrator role. You're the voice of your team. You're speaking to the media 4 or 5 times a week during the season. That's one aspect. And again, yeah, you're right. There's so much more that goes into being kind of the face of an organization. And I think clearly, no matter who is hired, this coach will become the face of it. But again, obviously they want them to, because we're not going to see billboards with, and I don't think Sasha Brown wants his face on a billboard. I mean, the coach is what promotes the team. And I think that's what we're going to see no matter who it is. And you just want someone that's going to be comfortable in that role, whether they are a first time NFL head coach or a second time NFL head coach. But clearly the majority of candidates we're seeing bandied about likely, if you're playing the math, first time.
I like that there's a mix of it, but you're right. It's likely that it would be, but there is a mix of guys who have been coaches before in the National Football League, which I like as well. I think that the buy-in is going to be critical, and I think it will be very exciting to have an opportunity to have that type of synergy. And I think when you look back, there never was that synergy.
Right.
Because even, and I'm talking about just the Jimmy Haslam here, with Joe Banner and Rob Chudzinski, Rob was kind of well beneath him, but also separate, and had clearly a different vision on things, because as Joe Banner said on NFL Insiders, the head coach almost beat me up when I traded Trent Richardson. So he was not quite on board with it. And I think that's going to be key, because I don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say this is going to be the New England Patriots do this. So when the Browns do it, I don't want people to be surprised, but I think there's a good chance that you heard about the trade rumors around Joe Thomas. I think there's a much higher chance with this regime in charge that something like that will happen. So people need, I think, to be prepared for that. And a coach does, because this is, if you're doing this, and I think what Jimmy Haslam is doing it and saying it, it would be, this is something that needs to be implemented over time. And a coach needs to know that they're going to have the opportunity to be along with the process, because they're going to be bought into it. But to know that we're going to give up some short-term players for long-term assets that we hope to develop into a great team. And I think, not saying that this is going to become the Cowboys, so don't say that. But when you look back at what the Dallas Cowboys did before they got good, they went to straight rock bottom. They traded their best player, Herschel Walker, for a ton of picks. They got the good young talent, and they even struggled immediately the first year with Troy Aikman.
1-15
the first year, I think? 1-15, yeah. But then they accumulated talent and built it the right way and ended up getting that great roster that we know went on to be one of the great dynasties of the National Football League.
The good thing about these interview process, the kind of the lengthy interview process involving Korn Ferry, who does a lot of that back-end research and really gets to know these guys even before they're there in front of you, I would think it would be hard for a candidate to fake the buy-in during the interview process. I mean, especially with these guys having such good jobs that they're coming from. You know, a guy like throw out an Adam Gase, who's been patient in this process. I think a lot of these interview candidates that are being mentioned have the ability to be patient. They're beloved at their current jobs. They can be in that position, maybe wait a year and go to a place where they maybe feel more comfortable. I don't think you're looking at a list of candidates where someone's just going to be desperate to jump at a job, even if they don't believe what that team is doing. So I think it would be hard for a candidate to really come into that interview process, fake it, and then come in here and disagree with what the direction and think that they can fix the thinking of Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta.
Of course, and I certainly am excited to see what one guy likes, and that is Hugh Jackson. And apparently the Browns are going to get the first shot at him. Ian Rapoport saying that the Browns will be his first interview the day after the game against the Steelers. I'm interested. I like that he's been in the NFL before. I like that he is strong and we'll get these guys in shape. I think we will have, if you see Hugh Jackson here, you will see an incredibly different training camp than you saw last year with the Cleveland Browns. And I think that he has an opportunity to really come in here and be good. I would like to see that if he buys in, because I think he's the kind of guy that believes. It also takes a certain kind of guy who believes in himself to say, all right, I know that what you're going to give me is going to ultimately be right and that I can weather this storm and make these improvements and develop the guys you give me. Because I think that's another key thing. Whoever it is needs to be a good developer of talent and a good CEO in the sense that he can bring in the coaching staff, as you said, that is also very good at developing talent. By the way, Paul DePodesta, one of his specialties is figuring out how to best develop talent and the organizational practices that are utilized to do that, whether it be high performance, psychologically, the way that you scout, recruit, etc. Though that's one of the things that he did, and that's one of the things that Sandy Alderson talked about strongly when he was praising DePodesta on his way out of New York.
How about this Bengals coaching tree that's emerging? I mean, look at what the two coordinators are doing now. Both of them are in the playoffs.
Well, it'll be amazing.
Gruden and Zimmer.
And who will win a playoff game first?
Ooh, I'll go with Gruden.
Marvin Lewis?
I'm picking.
You know what I mean? Because it's the Lewis coaching tree. It's amazing how much success it's produced, even though he still hasn't won a playoff game.
I think Gruden's got the best shot at it this weekend. Best matchup.
Definitely the best matchup.
I think it's Gruden. But along those lines with Jackson, yes, just going back to it, I almost think I'm a big fan of Jackson as well. We've talked about it off air before. I almost think we do have some information bias with Hugh Jackson. One, because we've seen him coach before, and two, we've all seen him on Hard Knocks. And I really liked him on Hard Knocks and everything like that.
He did a good job with the Raiders. Yeah. The only reason he wasn't there is because that's when they'd made a complete regime change,
right,
and he was forced out. He did a very, very good job.
Yeah. No, I think that has won over a lot of people, is simply seeing him in that environment.
Yes.
And the same reason why maybe you were maybe down on a certain former Falcons head coach that's been,
right, Mike's,
been,
yeah,
mentioned. Yeah,
yeah.
So.
Yes. All right. We're going to take our first break here, but I want you guys to ponder this. It is our Ohio Business Machines hot topic of the day. What's the one quality you must have in your next head coach? You can give us two. You can give us three. Give us your top candidates as well, and we'll talk with that. I'm excited about this. Obviously, you know that for the last few days, but I think this coaching search is going to be interesting, and I think a lot of people's concerns would be whether or not – a lot of people's concerns would be, could – you get the coach that you want. And I think that's something that's going to play out over the next few days, and we're going to find that over the next few weeks, and we'll find that. I think the Browns will. And I truly believe when you get Sashi and Paul in a room with one of these people, they're going to be impressed and understand what's going on.
In other years, this field of openings would be a lot bigger. This is a relatively small crop of openings around the NFL right now.
Absolutely.
So there could have been tougher situations that the Browns found themselves in.
I totally agree. And some person said, I don't think I can listen to Nathan Zagura after hearing that he says Greg Popovich would be a great NFL head coach. And other people were like, you're so right on. So right on. We'll see. Who knows? We'll find out. 216-578. Well, actually, we'll never find that one out. Let me just go ahead and say 216-578-0850. Call us up, Zagura. Gribbs. Gibbs. CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura and the Gribbs in for Matt Wilhelm now. 216-578-0850. We'll go to the phone lines, get your thoughts. Coaching search underway. We will have confirmation. Gribbs will have confirmation for you on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. As these interviews are conducted and we're able to confirm them, we know the names that have been linked to the Browns at this point, but can't confirm yet, but that will come. Let's go to Jim in Cleveland now. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nathan, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Oh, I'm great.
Good.
Love your show, man.
Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about them retaining, DeFilippo?
I certainly would be intrigued by it. I think it depends on who's hired, right? If Hugh Jackson were to be hired, the chances of John DeFilippo staying here, probably pretty slim, I would think. Just in the sense that...
Yeah, that's what I would... Did they work together, though, in Oakland?
They did not. I looked that up. They did not overlap.
Okay. Okay.
Because I would imagine Hugh Jackson's going to want to run his offense. That's why he got the job, because he's been that effective as an offensive mind.
Yeah, I remember in the middle of the year, you did an interview with DeFilippo, or I heard him on your show, and he sounds like a really sharp guy. I think he's an up-and-coming coach. I would really like to see him try to keep him, but...
I believe that you are correct. I like John DeFilippo quite a bit. I think that he showed his ability to adapt to the ground game over the second half of the year and was actually very, very effective with that ground game, which I thought was super important to see because it wasn't there. I don't know if people realize this, but I was going through and doing the numbers. Do you know that if you take the last four games and extrapolate them over the whole season, Isaiah Crowell would have had a 12,000-yard season, a 1,200-yard season.
That would have been a heck of a year.
Yeah, 12,000 would have been something. 1,200-yard season, scored 12 touchdowns, and averaged 5 yards a carry.
Yeah, something like it was 160.5 yards per game over those last four games. The previous six, which was the roughest patch of the season, was like 56 rushing yards per game.
Yeah, so I was happy that he figured out. I think he is a good offensive mind. I think that we were maybe a little too pass-heavy, ultimately, given the talent that we had over there, but that's something that he can evolve and learn from, and I think that, you know, he can grow. I thought, given the talent he had to work with, nobody got more out of less than John DeFilippo on this coaching staff.
I think it comes down to you want, and I think the coaches will say the same thing, because I think a lot of these guys will have opportunities elsewhere around the NFL.
And the Rams have asked for permission.
You want whoever the head coach is to be comfortable with these guys. You don't want them to have someone, you know, like, forced on them or something like that. You want them to know that they can work together well, whether that is hashed out in the interview process or in the first few days that they're on board. You just want a coaching staff that is also on the same page. And like we keep saying, having everyone on the same page, same direction, and believing in what's going on.
And a lot of people, are into Matt Patricia, background as an aeronautical engineer, comes from the Patriot way, so would understand an organization that has a strong belief. He would not be able to bat an eye if you traded a quote-unquote superstar for a draft pick, because that's the organization that he came from. So that's something that certainly would be useful, I think, in that regard. Hugh Jackson has seen it, by the way, with players in Cincinnati when they let Michael Johnson go because they weren't willing to pay him that premium that he wanted. So I think these guys coming from winning organizations would be that is intriguing. Let's go to Ellis in Orlando. Ellis, welcome to the show.
Hey, gentlemen. First of all, Happy New Year's to everybody, and I wish you and your families a great 2016.
Same to you.
First of all, you know, at first when they did all this analytics decision and the Sashi Brown hiring, I wanted to punch myself in the face because I'm a 48-year Browns fan. I think it was just more frustration than anything. But ESPN did a great segment today about analytics and how it can work. And like I tweeted you earlier before, Nathan. Analytics was in place when we were choosing the quarterback this couple years ago, and everything pointed to Bridgewater. For whatever reason, we went to Manziel. And with that being said, I hope whoever we get in here is not just the yes guy. And if the owner does decide to say, hey, I think we should go this way, I hope he's not afraid to go, you know what, Jimmy, I don't agree with that, and we're going to continue the course in this direction.
Well, and I think part of the reason that you have Sashi Brown in charge and Dee Podestik here is because what Jimmy Haslam did, and this is what's so funny, this is what people don't understand about that situation and about that draft, is he said, look, I just hired you, Ray, and I just hired you, Mike. If you guys don't want Teddy, which is at that time they didn't, and you want Johnny, that's who you get to draft. The notion that that analytics study was put in place and everybody wanted Teddy Bridgewater, and then Jimmy Haslam just said, no, we're taking Johnny Manziel, is erroneous. What happened was that analytics study was in place. They did. That analytics study said Teddy Bridgewater was the guy to draft, but people got scared off by his workouts. They didn't like the way he presented himself as a quote-unquote leader, et cetera, which has been proven to be an erroneous assumption on many, many levels. And he was basically removed, not from the draft board completely, but so far down it that he never would have been picked by this team, which is sad. And we ended up with Johnny Manziel. And that's how that happened. And I think you had intelligent people, just think biologically, in there saying, this is the study we put together. This is why this works. We've studied the successful traits of quarterbacks throughout history of the National Football League. And all of this data and analysis on all kinds of things. It's not just stats that you can't even begin to comprehend looking at every quarterback that's ever been drafted has led us to conclude without question Teddy would be the best quarterback. And if you can, it's not too hard to think about who would be involved in something like that. And that was ignored, and it's been proven out to be a bad decision. That's one of the reasons why when Ray and Pet were gone, immediately Sashi was empowered.
And I think this has been expressed a lot in stories and everything like that, and NFL writers that know how the NFL works. This type of stuff is implemented to a degree everywhere around the NFL. And I think the reason why it's not as maybe – why fans don't maybe know about it as much is because the NFL is kind of – I wouldn't want to say a league of paranoia, but they don't want to release what you're doing because of competitive advantage. That's why you keep hearing if this works with the Browns, you're going to see copycat stuff around the league.
Of course,
because
you are.
Of that. So, but I think a lot of these teams implement it without kind of revealing how much they actually are.
I don't think
it.
Anybody's going to be doing it the way that the Browns are doing.
No, I agree with that.
And I think that football more so than any other sports. People have to remember. Put yourself. Go back to the beginning of the Moneyball era. The old scouts were like, this is garbage. You don't know anything. It's all about the five-tool player. Football is very much an old-school, good old boy mentality network, and this is something that is in some ways dangerous to that whole ethos, that whole ideology of how you run this sport. And so if in super bright people now, Paul Dee Podesta played football at Harvard. Was a good wide receiver, so he played the game. But that people can come in and apply intellect and problem solving. What analytics truly is analyzing every possible bit of information, not just numbers, every possible bit of data to solve problems and to find inefficiencies, find ways to create better outcomes more consistently. That's what it is in a nutshell. And so that's what the Browns are trying to do. And if you're a Browns fan, you've had, since they've come back in 1999, a 16-year problem that has produced no solutions. So at least knowing that two of the best, and certainly one in terms of Paul Dee Podesta that's done it in other sports, of the best problem solvers and intellectual people who understand the outcomes and processes that can derive significantly better outcomes on a more consistent basis should be exciting.
Yeah, and I think the unfortunate thing that gets lost in this is people – they hear analytics and they're like, oh, so you're taking away all the personal aspects of the entire process, the interview processes, the researching process. No, that's part of it. That goes into the equation as well. It's not as if the Browns are just going to go not interview any of the players that they're going to draft. I mean, that's going to be part of it. If anything, it's going to be more in-depth.
You're going to have – so imagine what you're saying about interviewing players. You could go back and go through every interview that you've ever done with a player in your team, and maybe you have access to others. And you'll be able to find if there are any common trends, traits, et cetera, in those interviews from verbal cues, from the way somebody physically responds to a question that lead to success. Are there any correlations? That's what you're trying to do, is go through data that people aren't even thinking of and slicing it in ways that people haven't even comprehended yet, and finding out if you can find an advantage in there. So right. It's not stats. It's not stats. A way, a methodology of attacking information and sifting through it and slicing it and identifying within that information the most efficient ways to find positive outcomes more often.
And again, it's exciting because will we even know how deep it really goes, even working inside this building, or how much will even the fans know, like or other NFL organizations know what the Browns will be doing in the coming years, and how will this be implemented? First year, second year, how will it differ? I think that's going to be the storyline we'll be continuing to follow throughout the next few years.
I had a national person who said to me that if Dee Podesta can come in here and do, from a process standpoint, efficiency standpoint, with Sashi what he did in baseball, that the Browns for a long time will run circles around people and how they utilize the draft, salary cap assets, free agency, everything on those regards, and in player development for years, because the NFL will be the slowest moving organization to change to that model, even if it is successful.
Right.
So it's interesting. It's certainly an interesting experiment, right? We're going to take a break. Connor Orr wrote a good article at NFL.com, will be with us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, when we return.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura with Gibbs and the Gribs in for Matt Wilhelm today. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline now and bring in Connor Orr, an around the NFL writer for NFL.com, who wrote an article at NFL.com called "The Rebuild: Cleveland Browns Make Radical Changes." Connor, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly appreciated reading your article. Thought it was a very good look at what the Browns are doing. And in your, you know, research for that article, what were the main conclusions that you have drawn at this infantile stage for what the Cleveland Browns are trying to do with the promotion of Sashi Brown and the hire of Paul Dee Podesta?
Well, I think it's two things. One, I mean, you know, the hire was kind of really misunderstood as kind of this rebirth of Moneyball or an attempt to make Moneyball a football thing. And I think really what it's about, if you read into Paul Dee Podesta, you read into what he's done in baseball and outside of baseball, in the medical field even, he's had some connections. It's more about organization. It's about understanding the resources that you have at hand and trying to use them in the best possible way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that's really, you know, the key driving factor between this. And I think the other thing is just, you know, accountability and relationships, just making sure that everyone's on the same page, everyone's happy, and when, you know, you need to report things to ownership, everything, it's one solidified message. And I think that that's something that a lot of organizations strive for.
In your research and just what you've learned about Dee Podesta and what he's implemented at other teams, are you able to gauge kind of a timeline on how quickly something like this could have an impact on what you see on the field, especially in a league where teams can really make big jumps in one season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a one-season move, but, you know, at the same time, I do think that you're going to see immediate improvement because the two of them are on board before the hiring of a head coach. And I think that that's important because whatever head coach comes in here is going to have to take this job with the knowledge that this is the direction that they're going in. And these are the two guys that really, you know, along with him are going to answer to Jimmy Haslam. So I think that that's going to help the process along, but, you know, in order to, you know, synchronize your scouting department, to make sure that your sports science department and your analytics department are working together, all this stuff. I mean, I could see it taking a year or two or maybe even three, but, you know, I do think that there's no doubt that as long as the head coach is on board, which he should be, there should be some signs of immediate progress.
Talking with Connor Orr, wrote an article about the Browns reorganization and the radical changes they have made at NFL.com. I've tweeted out the link multiple times. You certainly can check it out. And one of the things that struck me is you talked to two executives, one in the AFC, one in the NFC. The AFC executive, you identified Dick Cass, who was from the Washington, D.C. law firm Wilmer, Cutling, Pickering, Hale, and Dorr, that had not only Sashi Brown work there once, but also Browns president Alex Shiner. And Dick Cass knows both of those guys very, very well. His overall impressions of Sashi, I know you highlighted some in the article, but for those who haven't read it, his impressions of Sashi and why he is so, as you mentioned, prideful with his promotion.
Well, you know, if you go to that law firm, I mean, it's such a powerhouse place. And, you know, it's funny to kind of talk to people that aren't on the personnel side. I mean, because this law firm is kind of so much bigger and handles so much more money. It operates on an entirely different level than an NFL football team. But, you see these guys that kind of congregate together, and they all seem to be interested in sports, and that's where they want to spend their time and their efforts. And, you know, I mean, Dick Cass worked on the purchase of the Dallas Cowboys for Jerry Jones, so he set a very high standard for anyone that he worked with. And he said Sashi Brown right away was very, you know, problem solver, a guy that people yep. could go to, and, you know, he could solve issues. He was agreeable, but, you know, wasn't afraid to take charge. And I think that that's why he had no doubt, I think, that he could take charge in a situation like this, because even though people assume that football is a very insular world, I think it can work with outside voices.
You talked about, you know, talking about Sashi and a problem solver. And that's how I've been trying to articulate it to our fan base here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, is that the Browns have had a 16-year problem that has not been solved by just kind of switching out the people in the exact same roles and attacking it the exact same way. And what they're trying to do is bring in an incredibly intelligent person in Sashi, an incredibly intelligent person in DePodesta, and have them solve the problem and try to utilize information to try to find any efficiencies or inefficiencies that exist that they can take advantage of to produce better outcomes on a consistent basis. I think when you say problem solver, that resonates with me because I think that's what it is. The Browns have a problem organizationally, and now they're trying to solve it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it should at least instill some confidence that this is the conclusion that, you know, Jimmy Haslam came to after really a lot of time and research. A lot of, you know, some people even inside of football are thinking, well, if nothing else worked, they might as well try this. But, you know, at the same time, this was actually the culmination of some research. I mean, Jimmy did meet with the heads of other very prestigious organizations in other sports and just smart people all around that understand how to run a business. And, you know, Jimmy does. But at the same time, this football is a really radically different thing. And I think that, and sports are in general, and I think that his time away kind of talking to different people and trying to understand how successful organizations work, it's brought him to this point. And, you know, I think that there's no way that you can kind of, you know, say anything poorly about the move yet, because we don't know how it's going to work out. And I think that
that's not going to stop anybody, Connor. Come on. This has already been condemned widely by some, but actually a lot of national articles like yours and others have been in praise of it. And I thought this was one sentence that I think people have a whole lot of concern with. And I thought this was one sentence from your article that was really good. And it's a quote from the NFC executive. And if you can expand on it, that'd be great. It says, this model averts a lot of the real trouble that festers inside organizations. It's not like these guys are going to be calling plays. It's different, but it could work. And that's talking about the alignment and overall organizational vision, and that whatever coach comes in has to be bought in naturally to what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, not only that, but just really on the day-to-day level, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, you're giving this quote-unquote analytics expert control of the 53-man roster. What a disaster. But, you know, really what it means is, you know, Sashi is going to be the person that just makes sure that everyone's in agreement. And,
right.
You know, that's such a huge thing, especially when the personnel director is reporting directly to him, and then Sashi and the head coach both report to the ownership. It just creates kind of a structure where everybody seems to be on the same page. And, you know, Sashi's the person that's going to make sure that they are. And, you know, I think that it's unique in that the organization is hiring a non-football guy, you know, or a traditionally non-football guy, but a guy with a reputation for problem solving and a reputation for bringing people together. And I think that that's really what football is all about at the end of the day. It's managing egos in a very stressful situation.
Connor, I think the biggest criticism that we've at least seen the initial reaction from folks is that a setup like this is going to scare away a lot of candidates, and you're going to end up having a hard time finding a coach. Is that true on what you've heard, or what have you heard from seeming like the Browns are going to be interviewing a lot of guys over these next few days?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked to a few executives who, just based on the setup where Sashi has control of the 53-man roster, that they planned on turning down interview requests for personnel guys just because they didn't have to grant them. And so that does put you in a unique situation. But again, like we talked about, it puts you in a situation where whoever you hire is going to be the person that wants to be there. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that goes so much further than name brand or, you know, reputation, because, you know, there's such a, even though it doesn't seem that way, there's such a thin line between, you know, average and great in the NFL. And I think it's the people who buy in 100% of the time that are the ones that are consistently great. So I think that although it might prevent you from getting the quote-unquote hot coaching candidate, I don't think it's going to prevent you from having a good football team. And how many times have we seen the hot coaching candidate or coordinator not work out anyway?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. I'll just follow. Are there any names that you know that have a reputation of being an open-minded kind of coach or someone that would be open to this kind of setup?
Well, it's interesting just because, you've heard like names like, Matt Patricia thrown around, the defensive coordinator of the Patriots, and, a person who 3 years ago, 2 years ago, I thought should have gotten some head coaching interviews. I was doing some research for another project recently and ran into someone who knew him well, and just the way that they describe him as even a young person in college at a polytechnic institute of all places in rocket science. I mean, these are guys that see things differently. They're always thinking for the next advantage. I think he would be a great fit in Cleveland. But at the end of the day, it's who's in his ear as well, telling him this is the right move, this is the wrong move. And, is someone like Paul DePodesta a big enough kind of draw for a guy like that? And I would really like to see the two of them working together. I think that would be very cool.
I certainly would as well. And when you talk about, this top talent evaluator, as we're calling it, as you talked about, some teams don't have to grant, I think there are a lot of candidates out there that actually would fit this bill and would like it, whether it be someone who wants another go-round as a general manager or whether it be someone who is a young guy that really will have the opportunity to be the top talent evaluator in this organization, because that's really what you are going to be, and you're going to work right with Sashi Brown in making those decisions. That's something, as Dick Cass said, Sashi's greatest strength is his ability to know what he doesn't know, and he's not a guy who has sat there and watched the tape over and over. Now, he has done more player evaluation than people actually realize, given his role with the Jags and the Browns, but I think it's an exciting opportunity for somebody to come into an organization that will be run very, very well, that will try to put the best processes in place, and you get to be the one that is actually at the center of that in terms of running all the evaluations in the scouting department.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about, making parallels between football and business, and this does kind of have a tech startup sort of feel in that, it's going to take a very energetic and enterprising individual, and I think that there are people in the NFL that are attracted to that. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, exactly where the person came from. I mean, I think it's as long as you're committed to the process. And there's so many, between scouts and assistant GMs and personnel people, so many people that are privy to the same exact information,
right,
and the same events. And so, not that you say that people don't stand out above the rest, but at the end of the day, if one of those guys can buy in and then plug into this system, and if this system works, I think that's really all you're looking for.
Absolutely right. Connor, we certainly appreciate the time. Sorry we got you a little bit late, but thank you for your time here on the show. And we urge everybody, I tweeted out the link again, to check out Connor's article about the Browns and what they are doing with this organization. He talked about it here. You can follow him on Twitter, by the way, at Connor Orr, C-O-N-O-R-O-R-R. Again, C-O-N-O-R-O-R-R. There you go. Connor, we appreciate it. Thanks so much, and looking forward to see how this goes for the Browns and what else you put out about it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll take our break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our first hour. Your reaction to what you heard from Connor Orr. I thought some very interesting things about the perception from other executives in the NFL. Dick Cass, obviously a lawyer, president, very successful with the Baltimore Ravens, and this NFC executive that's out there that's talking about that he likes it, eliminates a lot of stuff. We saw that here. You saw it, and I saw it. As things started to unravel here, the friction and tension because of a complete different belief in what needed to happen in this organization from the coaching side and the personnel side was an issue. This is supposed to eliminate that and get this organization of like-minded people in one frame moving forward to do one thing and one thing only: win.
Yeah, and that's the biggest test to any kind of long-term plan is if, like you said, what happened with the Cowboys, they go 1-15, is being confident in your plan, even when in maybe year one, year two, it doesn't look like it's working on the field. You got to be able to weather that before you can actually feel the fruits of what you've planted.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be back wrapping up the first hour. Zagura, Gribbs, Gibbs, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Zagura, Gribbs, Gibbs with us on the board. We're just going to have a quick segment here because at the top of the hour, Matt Derry will be with us to talk about the first candidate linked to the Browns job, Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator of that Detroit Lions team that really turned it around in the second half of the 2015 season, finishing 6-2 on their last 8 games. So we've got that coming up. Gibbs, we got anybody on the phone, or do you want to get into some tweets or just some discussion? I'm even curious to see what you thought of what Connor Orr had to say.
We can actually go. Do you want to take a couple quick calls real
sure.
quick?
Sure. Who we got?
Let's see. Let's go to Bill in Pittsburgh.
Man, Bill's been patient. Yes, definitely go to Bill. What's up, Bill?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man.
All right, let me just preface this by saying I'm not dismissing what the Browns are trying to do here, but I just wanted to kind of cut through the corporate jargon and all the buzzwords and stuff
sure.
that are used. All right, now you know, Dee Podesta is being called the chief strategy officer. Right, and he's trying to implement his vision. So I just wanted to kind of get what your opinion was on what the quote unquote vision is as it pertains to the product on the field, and that's just basically to say, what do they believe? How do they want to play? And I'll just say this, for the longest time, you know, you don't know what the Browns are attempting to do. The only time that I was really certain of how the Browns were trying to win games was when Mangini was there. I knew they were lining up in two tight ends with a fullback, and they were just running leads off tackle. So I'd just like to hear what you guys think the vision is in terms of how they're going to attempt to play the game.
Okay, so I think I can answer that by saying that I don't think you can know that right now
right.
because what Dee Podesta and Sashi are here to do is make this organization as efficient as possible in producing the best outcomes of how you construct the best roster. The head coach who is going to be aligned with that vision from an organizational standpoint is going to be the one, along with his coordinators, who set up the tactical plan of attack, I guess you would say, how this team is going to operate as a football team. Now, Paul Dee Podesta may analyze every NFL team and find out that there are ways to be more successful from a tactical standpoint that information would be shared with a coach, but the head coach is going to be the one that's going to decide how this team plays football. What they're trying to do is create an organizational structure that does everything it can using all the information in the world to let that head coach do that with the best crafted roster in the most efficient manner. I think right. that really is what it is.
Right. I can't see Sashi and Paul Dee Podesta in that interview be like, hey, we're going to run a 4-3.
No, I don't.
We want this team to be built on the run. I don't know.
Now, they could have, at some point, they could say, you know, through the benefit of analytics or understanding it, that
right.
it is proven over the last 4 years as the NFL has transitioned, and we've seen from 2009 to 2015 the biggest transition in the history of the NFL slanted towards passing. Now, they'd be able to use that data and figure out that in the modern NFL, the best defense to run is a 4-3. Here are the reasons why. They may understand that. And now that may shape what they're looking for in a head coach. But as I understand it, that's the coach's job. What they're going to do is create the best organization. I think if I was a head coach and I knew that in third and long in the NFL that certain coverages and certain schemes were the most effective, that's great information to have.
Right. And again, you're going to have to that's the importance of finding the right fit candidate for this job, because I think there are some coaches out there who would not take that information and do anything with that. I think they'd be kind of set in their ways, and they've always done it a certain way, and you know, they're the coach. They, you know, I think that's why during this process you're going to weed out candidates that you believe would help and best utilize those systems while still being strong enough to maybe say no, we're going to pass on that. You still want a strong voice in that coaching position, but you really want that open mind. And I think you'll find through this process that there's going to be maybe some guys that just maybe wouldn't be comfortable with that.
Yeah, and I think that, and as Real Chuck D says, for the analytics to work, wouldn't the smart guys need to know what scheme we're using? Yes, that's going to be set by the head coach. They're not going to come in here and tell a head coach how to coach a football team.
Right.
They're going to give him information. They're going to all work together. But that's going to be the part of this that is set by the head coach, and that's why we can't answer. I don't know kind of when you have the head coach, that's what he's going to tell you. I can tell you right now what type of an organization the Cleveland Browns are trying to be. The football on the field, obviously, the biggest part of that, but what this organization is trying to do is identify how it can be the most efficient to help this football team win. Everything that's being done is to solve the problem that has plagued the Cleveland Browns for a long time. How do they win? Period. All right, that's what we got. When we come back, Matt Derry, co-host of Derry and Sharp weekdays from 3 to 7 on Detroit Sports 105.1, will be with us to talk about the Lions and Terrell Austin, candidate that the Browns will be interviewing, the Lions defensive coordinator. That's when we come back right after this.